Let's get started on our final session. A lot of cases, people, when they first see this sort of pointer-based code, have trouble really debugging it and understanding what's going on. So I think a good way to understand a method is to draw a box and arrow diagram and trace along what's happening visually from the beginning of the list to the end, always making sure that the code covers all the expected and possibly unexpected cases. So in this case, we're doing contains, and what this is supposed to do is check whether or not a particular item is in the list. So at least three possibilities come into play, I think, in this case. One would be that is in. So we want to go ahead and test, make sure if we try for something that is in the list, it properly says it is. Is not in. And then the special case probably, although it works out pretty straightforwardly, that there is nothing in the list. Therefore, there are no elements and it could not possibly have been in the list. But it should not crash in that case. It could simply give you the correct answer. So as time ran out, I was talking about the fact that how did I handle this issue that somebody could ask whether null, that is the null reference, is in the list. One of the things I could have done is throw an exception. But again, another alternative is to essentially give the right answer to probably was the wrong question. So if somebody's asking, is null in the list? It may be the case the person does not understand null could never be in the list. The list of null don't make sense. But it's also the case that, is null in the list? No, it's not. It couldn't have been. Therefore, it's not. And what I'm doing there is, I'm not sure if this is going to be something that I'd be proud of on a Sunday, but this is a Tuesday. So in this particular case, is the null in the list? The answer is no. The alternative, we throw some kind of exception yet again, saying you asked a bad question. This could never have been in there. You're an idiot, whatever, whatever. So in this case, I thought I'd illustrate this other situation. I don't think this is really terrible because somebody's going to start realizing, hey, how can null be in the list if I didn't put it in? You're going to try to put it in, and the code that puts something in the list is going to say, no, you can't put null in the list. So person will figure it out eventually, and sometimes getting a sound whipping is a good way to learn a lesson, and this is one way of doing that. So that handles that. So let's look at the logic of it. It essentially says, I'm going to have something called pointer that's going to follow down the elements of the list. But remember, we always have this header. So the very first value of pointer, which is P, is head.getNext. So that means I'm always going to start my search one beyond. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. There we go. I'm going to always start my search one beyond the header node. So now I have two cases that I'm going to worry about, is in and not. So what's my thinking? It's going to say, I can't go any further than the pointer hitting null. That'll happen when I go through successors, finally hit the last guy in the list whose next must be null. So my logic is, it is going to stop. And whenever I have a while loop, I want to be confident it's going to stop. And now I have to do a situation, how do I do compare? We're going to do this dot equals business that says, does the item that you're getting equal the item in the list? For basic items like strings and integers and so on, it's going to work fine. So in this particular case, so you can always redefine dot equals on more complex cases. So what I'm thinking about there is, what would it mean for two personnel records to be equal? Typically, it might be something like they have to have the same name and maybe the same identification number. But the way records go, sometimes you get a little bit out of sync. Your middle initial may or may not be correct. It's all those situations there. If you ever try to handle names, it really is kind of weird because some people don't have middle names. That's fine. Some people have multiple middle names. If you ever saw the birth of whatever the most recent royal child is, the child is, it just isn't hey you. It's hey you and then a list of all the important royals in the past that have to be included. So you have a situation there. It's possible for some situations for somebody not to have a middle name, but have a middle initial. Does anybody know the story of that? It was a fellow who was actually president of the United States, Harry S. Truman. What happened is S is not an abbreviation. Harry S. Dodd, actually, is not a name. What happened is they had two sides of the family, both of which had a grandfather whose name was S. So they said, hey, this is great. A great way when you have a child is to name it after a grandfather or put a name in there so the grandfather will be generous when the time comes. So they took both grandparents. They began with S. And rather than giving one or the other, just said S dot, and it covers both of them. So it's possible in that case. So you can imagine what happened if Harry Truman was coming through in your situation. Give me a middle name. Is none. Middle initial. Oh, yeah, that's fine. So crazy things can happen in the world of computing. So in this case, we're going to use dot equals. But the key point is you can program dot equals for more complex objects to give your sense of what equality ought to be. It doesn't necessarily need to be field-by-field identity. And again, it's up to you to decide if it's close enough that these two are the same thing. You know, you might be, in this particular case, looking up something and it's been updated since it was in the list. So things, you know, just situations where maybe your room number's changed, for example, and the you in room such and such used to be the room in such and other, and you managed to get into a better office and you're going to stay there come what may. So at any rate, the logic is, if he's equal, and certainly that element is in the list using your definition of equality, I can stop my searching. One of the cool things for searches is sometimes I can stop early. Once I found the match, the remaining guys don't matter. It may be the case that something can be in the list multiple times or not. That's up to the user. Nothing in the list says that the items have to be unique. I could program that in as part of my use, but nothing in lists say they have to have unique a field inside there. You can have multiple items in there. But if I found one, he's in there, I'll say. Otherwise, the logic is going to be, I'm going to get the next pointer, try the next guy. So let's try the logic. I'd say, okay, is it going to work if he's in? So in this case, I have a list. And H is the header, and values are 120, and this is minus 7. Didn't fit too well. So let's try matching against 20, which is in. So you should say yes. So he's going to start out there with pointer being equal to the first item, the guy I'm currently pointing at there. And the reason I got that is because that's the head node and his next field. So is pointer null? Answer is no, he's not. I say, okay, get your data 1. Are you equal to 20? This would be a straight numeric comparison. The answer is definitely not. So I'm going to go ahead and pointer gets this guy's next field. So I come around the loop again. It says, pointer, are you null? Answer is no, he's not. It says, get your data, which is 20. Are you equal? The answer is yes. So he returns true, fine and dandy. So is in worked. Let's try is not in. In that case, we'll look for 1984. So I'll start out again with the pointer at 1. And I'll say, are you not equal? Null, he's not. Are you equal? No. So in that particular case, get the next, advance the pointer in effect. 1984, not equal to 20. Advance the pointer, equal to 7, no. And I finally get to the point where a pointer returns the null value, saying there is no more list to be done. And I go ahead and says, pointer not equal to null? No, it is. So I stop my loop, fall all the way to the bottom, and return false. So not being in the list is also going to work properly. And I probably want this edge case of where I have just a single, have an empty list. So remember, that's the case where I have the header and I have no real data, so I have null rather than a pointer. So go back here and I started it up and I said, in this particular case, the pointer is going to equal head. Head is always there. Even empty list has a header because it's not part of the actual list. So I get his next and I get that thing, and of course that is null. I then flip down to the loop and say, is pointer not equal to null? No, it is. So the while loop never executes, and I return false. So with an empty list, he can't possibly be in, and I correctly get that. So this is a good way to debug it, is try all the paths that you think are reasonable. And I'm going to show you in a bit about a way also to enhance two-string to be able to show lists of this sort. And that, of course, give you some advantage when you're going ahead and tracing. You can show partial lists and so on. One of the things I should emphasize, you may not have appreciated quite yet, is that the tail of a list is a list. So the situation, remember that recursive definition. So if I'm, for example, this far down, and this was 1, 2, 3, 4 with the header here. If I'm at this point, I say, show me what I have yet to process. I can still print out a list, and all I'll do is say that the tail of any list is a list. If I get all the way to the end and hit null, that's the empty list, which in this particular case I'll probably print out as simply delimiters with nothing in between. So if you have something, as I'll show you, that can nicely print out lists, and later on you maybe do something more complex like trees, it'll be a situation there where being able to see partial lists is useful. And in this case, lists are simply built by adding items onto other lists. So it works out very nicely. And finally, we have to have remove. And again, we'll do the same trick as we showed earlier, namely, we'll have a list that has a header. Something like that. And in this particular case, remove takes a position. So, of course, we'll make sure that the pos is proper. So, again, a position less than zero is not legal. And a position greater than or equal to item count. In this case, the item count equals 3. But remember, by counting, this is a position 0, 1, and 2. So, as before, if the case that the position can't possibly be valid, I throw an illegal, no, it is an index out of bounds exception, which somebody is going to catch, or either it'll terminate the program. Now, in this case, I'm going to go ahead and I know I have a valid position, so I know it's legal for me to go ahead and remove data. So I'm going to go ahead and do item count, decrement item count early. The reason for that is I have an interesting kind of remove. And in fact, when you do data structure removals, you can actually program it two ways. One is to take the item you want removed and give it back to you. Say, so it's sort of give it to me and simplify the list. So I guess in terms of cut and paste notation, it's a cut. And if you do that, you cut something out of here and move it, but you still get the stuff that you cut, but it just disappears from where it was. You can also have the sort of situation where you simply want to throw it away. And I could have had a program of this that simply says, rather than returning a value of type E, in this case integer, I could simply remove it. Sometimes you have two operations, sometimes one. In this case, I think this is a tad more general, because if you want to throw it away, you can simply have a dummy variable. It says remove it, yes, you're going to return something, assign it to this guy, and I'll never use that guy. It's a little ugly, but trading it off against having two different methods is an issue where, you know, design-wise, I think this is not bad. But anyway, what this guy is going to do is it's got to return something. So typically, the very last thing it's going to do is fetch out the data it wants to return. So it does some other bookkeeping early. So in this case, let's see what it's going to do. So it's going to go ahead and say, give me two list nodes, the previous, which is head. Because remember, I'm going to remove something, I have to affect its previous. So in this guy, if I was going to remove that guy, for example, position one, I'd have to find the previous node. One of the cool things about the has a header is even if I remove from position zero, it ought to work. So let's make a note of this. We'll try to remove position not equal to zero. That's the more typical case. And also try removal from pos equals zero. We won't try the case where poses are out of bounds because that's pretty trivial. C works, and that's not likely to go bad. So in this case, I'm going to have two pointers. This looks a lot. What's happening here is I'm declaring two variables and initializing one and not the other. All of a sudden you say to yourself, why? Why is he not initializing this? Well, of course I am. It's simply I'm going to initialize this a tad later. So the really bad thing is using something that's been declared but not initialized. As long as you initialize it before it's used, you're okay. So it looks a little odd, but in this case, I could have set it to something, but I haven't really set up what I want to assign it to yet, so I'm just going to leave it alone. But it's important to look at each of these and say, if you declare and initialize it, good. If you declare it and don't initialize it, kind of as a sanity check, let's go ahead and check that there is an initialization that's pretty much guaranteed. In fact, Java tries to do that for you. You may have gotten something where it whines about the fact that this thing may not have been properly initialized before it was used, as it tries to trace possible paths and see if there's a way you could have made a boo-boo using a garbage value in a context where it should be non-garbage. So that's what I'm doing there. So it's going to be the old situation there that I'm going to count from zero as long as I'm smaller than pos. So as long as I'm smaller than pos, I'm going to stop off where? At the position prior to pos. So in this particular case, that's what this Prev business is about. So I start with header, and I'm going to find that particular guy that's one node to the left of pause. That also ought to work with position zero, because header is one node to the left of pause, which is yet another advantage for having that header node in there. It simplifies this logic. So my notion is find the previous guy you want. Target is going to be the guy that I want to remove. So in this case, if Prev, if I want to remove this guy becomes target, and this guy is Prev. And I stopped one early because in this case, the position was one, but in this case, I stopped, I only continued as long as I was less than position, so I stopped when my position was one less than the target, and this, that's the previous. So in this case, I found that. So now I say, okay, I know what target is. It's the previous next. So I got target set as I showed. And now I do a little bit of data structure editing. And I'm doing that in two steps. So let's make sure we're clear on that. So I say target gets your next field. So target gets his next field. That may be null. In fact, maybe another thing I should do is remove at the end to make sure that's handled. So what I'm doing here is illustrating if I was just coding this for the first time, I'd like to usually desk check it, which is say paper and pencil check it, or paper and felt marker check it, before I run code, because it's always embarrassing to have the compiler say, you screwed up, and get error messages. I do it anyway, but I don't like it. So in this particular case, it's saying, let's go ahead and get the target's next field. So that's the guy that the target node is currently pointing to, possibly null. And all he's going to say, once I got that, so that's essentially this arrow right here. And he's saying, let's set the next field for Prev to this value. So essentially what he's doing is unlinking this guy. He's unlinking this guy from the list by saying he's no longer reachable. This link has essentially been killed. So this guy is no longer accessible through the list. If I go along there, after one, now comes 10. So in that particular case, I have to special case and it says, if the next field is null, then bingo, this guy target is the new tail. And I have to update him because we use tail in various spots. And then I removed target.getData. Notice he's no longer linked in the list, but he still exists. So he's been pulled out, but I kept him alive just long enough so that I could go ahead and grab his data and return it to the user. Now he's really dead meat and it'll probably be removed by the garbage collector. But as long as there's potential use, we're fine. So that's what my intention is, and let's verify that work. I guess for pause not equal to zero, we've essentially gone through that one. So let's try removing at pause equals zero. So it's going to come up here. It's going to say Prev is equal to head. That's good. And target is not set yet. Well, in this third case, I'm going to remove a position zero. I equals zero. But zero is not less than zero, so this whole for loop executes zero times. So target equals prev.getNext. So this guy is target now, and he's the head of the list. And I say target's getNext, which is two, gets set to this. So now the head list is removed. And to take their case, I'm not dealing with null, so I don't have to reset tail, and I return target properly and his data. So when pause equals zero, I'm saved because this is really essentially the same situation. Having the header node means that being in position zero is not really all that special. And the final case we want to try is remove at the end. So let me clean this up a little bit. So we have the header, one, two, and value 10. And 10 has a null link. And it's position 0, 1, and 2. And the case I wanted to try is remove at the end. And that's got to make sure that tail gets updated. So in this particular case, I'm going to go up here and say, okay, that's position 2. Just counting from left to right. So in this particular case, previous equals head, so I'll start from there. And in this particular case, target's not yet set. So I is equal to 0, and I'm going to keep iterating until I is less than pos, which is 1. So in that particular case, previous will be here. Target will be here. And it says, okay, set targets get next. No, set previous to targets get next. So this guy now becomes null, which is what I wanted. And it says, if target get next is null, it is, then my new tail is here. So now I reset my tail to here. So here's a case where tail needed to be adjusted. And then I return target, which is my old n element, dot data, which is 10, and it works. So trying the base case and a couple of the oddball cases is a good way to check this. And as you're getting around to programming things like this, you won't necessarily be programming lists, but if you looked at assignment 2, you'll be doing a variation on that, doubly linked lists. And in those particular cases, much of the same notion will prevail. This is a spot where the notes that I prepared in advance ran out, but in this particular case, I've got a little bit more time, so we're not going to waste time. Who knows what it's going to be. So I apologize for not having these available for you to see in advance. What I'll do is later when I'm doing next week's notes, I'll take this information and add it to what's on the syllabus for this lecture so that you have a complete set of notes for this lecture, including the stuff which I haven't distributed. It was simply that. When I was preparing my notes, I looked at it and said, I may or may not get through this in time. And if I have some extra time, one of the cardinal sins of being a prof is not talking for as long as I can. So in a situation, I know you just love to hear me talk, and if you ever got lost in any of my talk time, you'd feel real cheated. Or maybe the bosses aren't upstairs. How do you point to the bosses? It used to be they'd be at the top floor, but there is no top floor. I don't know, you just really can point to wherever the bosses congregate in one place? Is it all in Andromeda? Yeah, I thought so. I saw the guards with the machine guns out there, so I knew that's where the big shots must be. The rest of you, if some crazy guy wants to come, take your chances, but the big shots get guarded. So this is, again, I've shown this before, but I just feel so strongly that I wanted to illustrate again that creating a two-string for data structures, even if they seem complex, is usually not that bad. Part of it is just deciding what you want to visualize it as. Clearly, it's going to be much harder, and I'm not even sure I know how to do it, to do the box and arrows. You're going to have some more screen-friendly sort of notation. But being able to see what you think the list is, you could certainly add some extra information about things like item count, if that were important, etc. But I'm going to do something that simply shows a list as, in this case, it was 1, 2, 10. And I think I'm adding commas. So it would come out something like that, which is pretty reasonable in terms of that. And because it's got parens or something, you know, you can tell that that's a list rather than an array or something else. So I've already said that I think it's a good idea to create that. And again, partially because once you have a two-string, lists can be put in any print or println or any other context where you need a string. And Java's kind enough to say, hey, this guy is some data structure like a list. You want a string. But there's this well-known magic method that says all good methods have a two-string. And with that two-string, if I need a string, you'll convert it from its internal form into a visually readable form that people might like. And I'm starting to wonder if not future languages may not have various variations on that. Instead of like just two-string, wouldn't it be cool if they had some way of going it to a two-dimensional visualization, something rather much like this, where I can actually visualize it in two dimensions? Or maybe if you go into, in the future, where you have 3D glasses, 3D visualization. Or if somebody's hearing impaired, maybe to speech. You see a lot of web pages, you can have web pages spoken to you, so if your vision is a problem, getting on the internet is not problematic. So lots of future things on this, and the notion is to make data as readily accessible to people and organizations as you possibly can. So this is a start, but I don't think it's at all the end, and I hope it's not. So in this case, it's going to say, I'm going to create a public method, string value, two string. I'm going to put that in whatever list class I'm happy to be working with. Remember, different lists may have different visualizations, so having one or the other makes sense. So in this case, all I have to do in this case is start with the left paren, which is the result. So let's kind of do it for this guy here. So I start out with the string with the open paren. So in this case, remember, I know it's a list, and list, linked list is a list, so I can do the old get routine. So I say, I know how many items I have, so my indices of valid items doing a get is from 0 to item count minus 1. So this will be position 0, position 1, and position 2. Let me just finish this because I'm right in the middle of it here. So what we'll do is I'm going to special case the fact that if I had the very first item, I don't need a comma. So in this case, I'm going to get the 0th item, but I don't know what it is. Remember, this is parameterized by E, but all good types have their own two-string. So I'm doing a two-string for lists, but I'm counting on the items, like integers, to have a two-string. So in this case, I add in the 1. I then go ahead, and for remaining ones, I'm even clever enough to put in a comma, because every item but the first has a comma to separate it. So it then puts in the comma and 2, and the comma and 10. And then at the end, it's going to put in the close paren, and bit by bit, it goes ahead and does it. So the situation here is, would it work if I had an empty string? I'm sorry, an empty list. What would happen? And again, I'm just worried about end conditions. Well, in that case, I would certainly have my left paren there. But if it has an item count of 0, notice I start with k equals 0, item count is 0, 0 is not less than 0. So this whole loop does absolutely nothing. It just skips by. I get to the bottom, add in my right paren, and away we go. So I also get a nice visualization of the empty list, which is a left and a right with nothing in between. And I think that's nice and clean. So with this minor amount of effort for lists, you're able to get a visualization. And certainly if you haven't already done it, you know, for projects, you know, for project 2, you might want to do something similar to it. You're going to have a circular linked list, so it has this notion of beginning and end. But certainly you have this notion of where I currently am in a circular linked list and show me all the remaining items. So something like that would probably be a value there. So let me just show you a little bit ahead, but we're not going to talk about it today. So people are asking me about iterators for lists and again in that. So we'll do an iterator for a linked list the same way we did an iterator for an array-based list. Just to show you that, again, this is not terribly difficult. So have a good week, and we'll see you next Tuesday, or I may see you on Thursday, depending on what's going on.